Konnichiwa.
Welcome to the Jandals in Japan podcast.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Konnichiwa, Jane.
Happy April of Terror.
Huh? What does that mean?
We're in April, and recently one of my friends said, oh yeah, Kyofu no Shigatsu, which means April of Terror. And I'm like, oh, tell me about that. I know April is a time of many changes, and you know, you maybe start a new job, you start a new school, start a new school year, change your grade, maybe you move to a different desk. Have you ever been like moved from one area of the office to the other in April? And then you're like, wow, oh. Nah.
Yeah, and well, it's more sort of that someone else comes and sits next to you who wasn't there before, right?
Right.
Because it's people change jobs within departments. Yes, that's terrifying in itself.
Yeah, so who's sitting next to me now? And are they a loud eater at lunchtime or whatever? Yeah, or like my husband got moved to a different building in his office complex, and the data on his mobile phone doesn't reach because it's near a mountain now. And it's sometimes you know, he's got like one bar on his phone, and things are changing, and people are not necessarily always thrilled about it. I mean,
such a contrast, isn't it, to the beauty that's going on outside our windows with the cherry blossoms blossoming and all the green foliage coming in. There's this sort of paradoxical inside everywhere else. It's quite horrific and terrifying. So what else did you learn about Kyofu no Shigatsu?
Yeah, well, in April, that is when all of the voluntold activities get moved on to the next sucker waiting who has to take their turn at this job. Voluntold activities are quite prolific in Japan, especially if you own a house or have a family with children. You will be voluntold to do a lot of things, and
oh dear,
these get changed. Who has to do it gets changed in April. And sometimes it comes down to doing rock, scissors, paper to decide these things, that nobody wants to do these jobs. And some of the jobs can be quite intense. It could be like showing up to man the crossing duty where the kids go to school. And it's, it can be quite often. I'm lucky it's once a term that I do it, but in some neighborhoods it's once a month. You have to factor this into your morning routine and getting yourself off to work.
Maybe we need someone to teach us how to do rock, scissors, paper secretly in the background so that we can all learn how to win the game and get out of these duties rather than losing and being the sucker, as you put it, who gets landed.
Well, even the most experienced Japanese person can lose at junken, rock, scissors, paper and get stuck with these jobs. So they really leave it to fate to decide these things. So it gets really quite stressful for a lot of people. So yeah, that's going on in the background for your Japanese counterparts or your, you know, people who live and work here in Japan. It's a lot to deal with at this time of year. So up till Golden Week. And then I think after Golden Week, we have another period of, it's like the Golden Week blues or something. People get a bit over the new thing that they have to deal with, whether it's a new school or a new job, and then and you know, that sort of new fresh thing is worn off anyway. So that's kind of what's going on here in Japan in the background.
Nothing really matters, and that's all, you know, get on with it. But actually, this is all in everyone's operating system, and it's a good point that you pull out. People are, they've got these things going on in their mind as they're trying to talk to you on Zoom or in person if you're coming to Japan. So just to be aware of that, there's a lot going on. And ask them about Kyofu no Shigatsu.
Yeah, did you get any new voluntold activities this year?
Voluntold activities.
Oh my God, we narrowly escaped the PTA. We were down to the last five in the rock, scissors, paper. I really should have gone in myself instead of sending my husband in because he wasn't very good. I thought he would be better than me, but anyway.
I must ask about some other people I know about the Kyofu no Shigatsu and find out if that's actually a thing that happens in deep in corporate world as well. Wow.
At least you get paid for that though, right? This is all like, you know, using your free time, that what little free time you do have, to be told what to do with your free time.
Well, there we go. That's so interesting. Well, today, can I move into the list?
You can. I've had enough talking about the terror. April of Terror.
The lesson. Why did I say that? But no, I don't mean lesson. I mean absolute gems that we got today from Jessica Tisch, who is country manager in Japan for Freshco. I won't go into it because I give a bit of an intro as we get into this episode, but she's just amazing. I mean, a former JET participant. She was based in Shimane. She's Japanese, peta peta, speaks Japanese extremely well and understands the business culture here and is leading a New Zealand company as their country manager in Japan. I think it's going to be a great one and you're going to love it.
Let's hear from Jess. Kia ora, Jess. Welcome to the Jandals in Japan podcast. Great to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I've been a long-term fan and follower. Lots of senpai ahead of me here, so I'm really excited to be with you both today, in person.
Well, we're really excited to have you and get to ask you lots of questions so you can share your knowledge with us. But before that, a fun question to get warmed up. Tell us one of your favorite discoveries in Kansai. So I know you haven't always lived down that end of Japan. What have you discovered since you relocated there?
Well, when I lived in Tokyo, I thought that Kansai is so far away. You know, Tokyo, everything happens in Tokyo. If you're not in Tokyo, you're so far from a cool place. But actually, living in Kansai, everything is really close. And for me, I live in Shiga, close to Kyoto, Osaka, and Lake Biwa, Kobe. So my favorite find in Kansai has to be Lake Biwa. It's the biggest lake in Japan. And it's amazing for swimming during a very hot Kansai summer.
That's awesome. I've always wondered if Lake Biwa was in fact a good place to swim because I grew up next to lakes in New Zealand, obviously, so I love a good lake to swim in. So yeah, okay, well maybe we'll come see you this summer while we are
Yeah, I'd love you to.
when we are
Yeah, more people
regretting
need to
our
get out here.
regretting our choices to stay in Japan for this summer. We'll be coming to visit you. What about you, Catherine? Any of your favorite discoveries in Kansai that people might
I
not know
love that.
about?
I love a good lake. That's got to be the classic comment for today. Oh, yes. So I lived in Osaka for 4 years, and I too thought it was a far away from Tokyo, but it's actually not. And it's just got so many things there so close by. But I feel for me, is it a discovery to talk about the differences between Tokyo taxi drivers and Kansai taxi drivers and just generally the population? But they're really exemplified, I think, by taxi drivers who ask the frankest of questions. Where do you live? Oh, you live in that building when they're dropping you off. Oh, how much is the rent? Are you living by yourself? Oh,
Just the rent.
yes. Are you married? You speak such great Japanese. And I realize instead of pushing back on that and telling them to sort of leave it to their imagination, which was a phrase someone told me to use, it never worked. So I just said, it's about that much. And oh, yeah, I'm definitely married to a Japanese guy. There's no way I'd be able to speak like this if I didn't get. And they're like, Naruhodo, of course. So I just appeal to their fancy and just give them any answer they wanted. So I had fun in
Right.
the end. I turned that round. So that was a discovery for me is that Kansai is very frank. So you just have to either go with the flow, but if you push back, you might find that you're going to be more affronted. So just go with it. Yeah. How
What a
about you,
great
Jane?
idea. That is so fun. Yeah, just tell them what they want
Great.
to hear. Like, of course
Yeah.
I'm married to a
Yeah.
Japanese man and
Yeah.
whatever and all of that and
They loved it. They're like,
give them a thrill.
oh, of course, that would
Yeah.
make sense. You know, it was just great. It was so much fun.
Confirm all their assumptions, yes.
Exactly.
Well, one of my favorite discoveries is, of course, the Hanshin Tigers, best baseball team in Japan,
There you
as of
go.
from last year. My husband and son are huge raging fans of the Hanshin Tigers, so I have also become a raging fan of the Hanshin Tigers, and I think actually attending one of their live games at their home ground in Hoshien would be quite the experience to have. Yeah, so one day our family will get
Yeah.
there for that.
I
Yeah.
confess not going to one of their games while I was there, but I used to see them on the trains all the time when they came back. They were just so well behaved. And just full of energy. I loved it. It was really great. Yeah. So today we are joined by Jessica Tisch, who is Country Manager Japan for FreshCo. FreshCo are a wonderful company. They're a fully integrated produce company. They're based in Auckland and they specialize in apples. I see you've got apples in the background there, Jess, today, and in squash, otherwise known as kabocha, and cherries. Japan's actually their largest export market. And it's really amazing to have Jess here today. We've been wanting to get her on the show for quite a while. Prior to joining FreshCo, she was with NZTE, and we'll get into that shortly. She's such a passionate fan of Jandals in Japan, constantly sharing with us some guests, Now she's guesting herself on the show. Also, she's just amazingly after any kind of New Zealand company and extremely active on her Instagram page at Tokyo underbar retail underbar things, which we will put in the show notes. Jess, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's a real pleasure to be here and love the mahi that you're both doing in this area. So, yeah, delighted to be part of it today. Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, I gave a little touch point there on your background, but just let's go into it a little bit more. Tell us a bit more about where you've come from and what brought you to Japan.
Sure. So I come from Blenheim in the top of the South Island and educated there, studied Japanese in high school. For some reason, from a young age, I was really interested in Japan. I look back at a lot of my school country projects and they were all about
Oh.
Japan. In high school, I realized as my school was promoting kids to study more academic subjects that actually, if I could speak a second language in my future, that could be beneficial one day. And of those on offer, Japanese appealed to me the most. And so throughout high school, I studied Japanese, and I was really fortunate that I traveled here to Japan on a exchange when I was 16. So sister city exchange between Blenheim and Tendo in Yamagata, and also Picton sister city, which is in Nagano. And our family had Japanese exchange students staying with us, and so I guess I was exposed to Japanese language and culture from high school. And then with my tertiary studies, I became passionate about accounting and decided I would follow the path of becoming a chartered accountant. And then I started as a grad at KPMG in Wellington. It was an amazing experience, very disciplined workplace. I learned a lot, but I quickly realized that there was a predetermined path to become an accountant, and I really wasn't ready for all of these exams and such. So I applied for the JET program, and at the age of 23, I moved to Shimane, a very rural part of Japan. The thing that's most famous about Shimane is that it's got the highest proportion of elderly people of any prefecture in Japan. And when I encounter Japanese people, they normally have not visited Shimane. It's very remote, I guess, in terms of its access to international airports. But I had an amazing experience on the JET program for 2 years. And then I worked for a Japanese manufacturing company after that for a year and a half. I wanted to stay in Japan longer, but get more business experience. So that in around 3.5 years that time. And then move back to New Zealand to finish off my accounting qualifications, get more experience in food manufacturing, and then eventually joined NZTE as a customer manager in Christchurch just before the Rugby World Cup. So through that employment and that role, I was able to apply for a role that came up in the Tokyo team in 2019 to come up here supporting New Zealand companies through the Rugby World Cup, but also ongoing.
Wow, just the right time.
And it's really interesting. You go back to 2019 when you arrived. I remember meeting you there around that time and thinking, oh, who's this new person? And they're from Christchurch or South Island, at least. I was so excited to have you come in. And it's just been an amazing journey to be friend of yours and collaborate and do all sorts of fun things together. So thank you for that. Do you think there's some Kiwi speaking people in Shimane now who speak Kiwi English over there?
Yeah, it was funny looking back, and I was often told by the teachers that I worked with to change my pronunciation for the kids. So instead of saying fast, for example, I was, had to say fast.
Fast.
Fast. Yeah. Tomatoes and all of
Oh
that.
my
Yeah.
goodness. Yeah, I bet you don't say tomatoes now. So
No.
interesting. But now you find yourself at FreshCo. How did that come about? Because it's an exciting challenge to be country manager here.
Yeah, so I joined FreshCo just over a year ago. I was at NZTE and ready for more of a new challenge, moving into the private sector. Obviously, we'd been through a pretty tough time during the pandemic here, so the nature of the work changed. And I just felt it was good timing to find something quite different. And at the time I was working for NZTE, my now boss, Greg Cross, who's a previous interviewee on this podcast, we got to know each other really well, and he was sort of ready to move back to New Zealand, and FreshCo was looking to appoint a new person in this role. And so I put my hand up for that, and although I didn't have a lot of experience in the horticulture sector, many of the customers of FreshCos I already knew, the retailers, the business environment. So naturally, we felt that we were a good fit for each other. Yeah, that's kind of how it started.
So it just shows you all those relationships that you've been building. And timing is every single thing, isn't it? Just being in the right place at the right time. Are there any challenges or key insights that you've encountered while being in this role, managing all of this fresh produce business in Japan? It's obviously everything's alive when it arrives in the country. You've got to keep it all nice and fresh and get it round the distribution network. What about that? Tell us about the challenges or insights you've got there, Jess.
Yeah, I guess looking at the consumer here, one of the first challenges that we're up against is that Japanese consumers tend to prefer Japanese produced food. They, in general, domestically produced food is superior to imported product. NZTE has done some great research on this, and that's quite different to consumers in other key markets for New Zealand's exports. So automatically, we're slightly on the back foot in that Japanese consumers have a lower trust for imported product. The flip side of that is, in our category, we've got Zespri, who's a trailblazer for New Zealand-produced food being, safe, reliable, counter-seasonal, delicious. So it's been a lot easier for us to make some progress in the category because of how Zespri have worked for 20 years or so to grow the awareness of New Zealand in the category. In the fresh produce category, also, Japanese consumers really like to eat in season. So people know, okay, it's persimmon season, we eat persimmons, it's peach season, it's apple season. So consumers, when they go into a store, they automatically look at the front bay in the produce category, and that front bay is always dedicated to the fruit of that season. So we are coming into Japan with a counter-seasonal product. So we're bringing apples to Japanese consumers at a time where they may not have chosen to eat apples. They might prefer to eat grapes or peaches, for example. So yeah, I guess some of the challenges that we face are within the category at the supermarket level.
Also, I think you have a different way of using apples in Japan, right? How the average
Yes.
consumer, how does the average consumer in Japan use an apple?
Yeah, so the average consumer here will take a large domestic fruit, peel it, slice it, and serve it up amongst the family. So it's usually consumed as a dessert, and there is still a perception that fruit is a luxury. So at the moment, with prices increasing in Japan, especially in the produce category, people may choose not to buy fresh fruit. They'll buy frozen fruit, or they may downgrade from an apple to a banana, for example, or not purchase fruit but focus on purchasing vegetables. So we are still up against the consumption style of fruit, which is normal in Japan compared to other markets. In New Zealand, it's not uncommon in the workplace that someone would just grab an apple and be eating it in the office, right? And that style of consumption is not so common here. People
Yeah,
are,
no, not at all. Right.
peeling the apple first, and then
Yep.
people are very conscious of those around them. So, they don't want to be eating a loud apple that's going to disturb the colleague sitting next to them. Yeah, so
Yeah,
that's
true.
very, very different in terms of the consumption style.
And it's even like thought that you must peel an apple, just like you must
Yeah.
peel an orange and you must peel a banana. Apple was considered a peeling fruit. So quite an interesting thing to get over with when you have your more, for example, snack size apples and introducing how they can be consumed as they are.
Even my 2.5-year-old daughter, who attends local Japanese daycare center, I try to serve her apple as I would eat it, and she refuses to eat an apple with skin, which is exactly the concept that we're trying to educate Japanese consumers. But even from a young age, within the daycare center as well, the skin is peeled. So
Very
it will take some
interesting.
education.
Yeah, I think that starts, isn't it, from the fertilizer that's been used and that's on the outside of the skin and therefore we shouldn't. But it's just such a nutritious part of the apple, right, with all the fiber that's contained in there. So tell me about that then. How are you helping to change Japanese consumers in their perception there of New Zealand produce? It's coming in a different season. What strategies are you using to kind of leverage the fact that it's the opposite season?
Yeah, I think we can start educating customers. So that the easiest way to do that is through in-store demonstrations, sampling fruit. Obviously, that couldn't happen during the pandemic year. So finally, kind of from last season onwards, that's become more acceptable and people are willing to try product samples in store. So that's one really key way to increase the awareness or education level of consumers. And I think we focus on growing regionally through Japan, but in general, consumers in Kanto, like the Tokyo area, are more willing to try, and so are the buyers, the retail buyers. In the more rural parts of Japan or those areas closer to Aomori, you know, Jane, you'll know that it's very conservative. So those areas, it's much harder to convince the retail buyers that, you know, we're bringing something to the category that's complementing the Japanese domestic apple, not competing with it. Yeah. So we need to do a lot of education, in-store education.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's just think, if it's in Aomori and you're putting apples there and then it's coming into apple season again, you don't want people having that scudet, tired of the apple, and it comes into the Japanese season. So I can completely get that explanation there, how to make it complementary for them rather than competitive. Yeah, that's an interesting comment.
Yeah, for people who don't know, like Aomori is an apple production center, right? There's a lot of apples grown. It's like trying to sell apples in Cromwell, like from Japan. Why would you do that, right? There has to be something super different about them, right? Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and I think gradually that understanding in Aomori amongst growers is changing. You know, they can see what New Zealand can offer in terms of innovation or growing techniques, pack house techniques that in Japan are very, very comparatively outdated. So maybe your listeners have a perception of Japan being really high tech in some ways, but in our sector, the agriculture sector, far from it. You know, you have 80-year-old woman climbing up a ladder in a 30-year-old tree, turning individual apples to allow sunshine, you know, right the way around. So the style that we grow in New Zealand is much more advanced in terms of using automation rather than manual labor.
Amazing. That is huge. And it is so true. And you mentioned Shimane before, but every time I visit my parents-in-law in Tottori, which is right next to Shimane, and everybody gets confused which one's which, it's 80-year-old people in the fields doing all the growing, which is very concerning, because in another 10 years, who's going to be doing the growing of all of this food that feeds people in Osaka, etc.? So Japan is not as advanced technologically in the agriculture center, and what an amazing opportunity that is for all kinds of companies in New Zealand. Yeah.
Am I hearing there then, Jess, that you are helping with innovation and helping with suggesting perhaps alternative ways of packaging or growing techniques?
Yeah, Freshco's been really good working with our Japanese partners here. So for example, inviting groups to New Zealand, showcasing, you know, the way that we do things. The terrain is somewhat different, but naturally we're great partners. You can see that in many collaborations done between the two countries. It might be the dairy collaboration in Hokkaido. We really hope that for apples as well, we can start to work more closely. But yeah, there are increasingly groups from Japan coming out to New Zealand to study how we do things in New Zealand. And another cool example that we've got within Freshco is this year we've got a 21-year-old guy from Aomori working for us on a one-year Japan working holiday visa. He's from Aomori. He's a university graduate, and his father runs an apple orchard in Aomori in a pack house. And he's come to New Zealand to study how we grow, how we pack, how we market, so that eventually he can come home and take over his family business, which is fifth generation in Aomori. So I just think that's a really cool example of how we have worked to try and collaborate between the industries.
It's a super cool example. And
I'm getting chills hearing about this.
Want to hear him on this show in a year's time when he comes back and just get his impressions. That would be super. And even you could probably help us interview him. Oh, how's that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just really incredible. And it's a way of bringing, you know, completely changing someone from Aomori with a fifth generation family business coming down to New Zealand to see what you do there. He must be absolutely living the dream. That's wonderful. Can you share then, Jess, anything else that's been quite a memorable success story for you or a milestone that you've achieved in Japan?
I think for our company, this is before my time, but one of the biggest milestones that we've achieved in Japan is our presence in 7-Eleven convenience stores. So as
Wow.
consumers are requesting more convenient ways of snacking, the category is changing to more cut fruit. So you'll see this in your local supermarket now. There's an increasing area of cut fruit, but also in the convenience store. And I think 7-Eleven's really leading in this way is the packed, fresh cut fruit. So for about 3 to 4 months of every year, FreshCo is the supplier of New Zealand apples to a processing company in Shizuoka. And they are peeling and cutting and putting those into a pack that's sold at 22,000 7-Eleven stores around Japan. So it's pretty hard for important products to succeed in convenience channel in Japan, but through many years of working really closely with this partner in the middle, we have been able to really grow the program. And I think our focus on Kaizen, so continuous improvement, has allowed us to form a very strong partnership with that company.
Wow, makes you proud.
Oh my God, so proud.
And
Wow, what a
very
great
easy to
story.
find FreshCo fruit, in any
What
convenience
months of the
store. So,
year, as you were saying, a few, like, is it off season from the Japanese
So
supplier?
from June to September.
Right.
Or we'll be buying apples from June to September in the combini then, if in hopes that
Please
they are
do.
FreshCo ones. Yay.
Absolutely fantastic. So, talking about then sustainability, it's a huge topic. All the boardrooms talking about it, many, many companies, it's on the top agenda. How is it then for FreshCo here? What role is it playing for you there in your operations? And is it really resonating with Japanese consumers? I'm really intrigued to know in your industry if it is.
I think it is starting to resonate with Japanese consumers, but perhaps the definition of sustainability is different to what you might define. So perhaps something like packaging or plastic use in packaging is not as important for a Japanese consumer, but more important for them when they think about sustainability is things like the soil health or the sprays used on the orchards, the safety of the product. I guess one of the challenges, particularly in the packaging space, is that it adds extra cost. And we've started to have conversations with a couple of large retailers in Japan who were interested in changing from plastic to cardboard. But when it came down to the finer detail, the change was too expensive. So to produce in cardboard is higher than plastic. So they can't make the change. And, we're bringing a product to market that's increasing year on year, the price, because of the weakening Japanese yen. So to add on extra packaging cost, it just makes it unaffordable. So in terms of sustainability within the packaging space, it's been really, really challenging to make any change. However, we are looking to make change in the way that we bring the product to Japan. So instead of packing into cartons that get disposed of, we are looking to bring reusable packaging to the market, like in a format of a large bin.
That's interesting. So when we find your apples in the supermarket, they're always pre-packaged, right? But they don't arrive from New Zealand pre-packaged. They get packaged in Japan and then put on the shelf.
Correct.
And
So we
so,
deliver in a 18 kilo carton, and then our customers repack the apples into plastic bags. Japan produce sector is fairly different in that way, and that bulk fruit is not so common here.
yeah, so when you walk into a supermarket, you will not find it unwrapped anything. It's all wrapped, right?
And
I
I
think
think
it's
the
one of the.
pandemic really heightened the, I guess, importance of packaging to Japanese consumers because, cleanliness and hygiene became increasingly important. So there was probably actually more packaging introduced to the category over the pandemic.
Absolutely. You still see the cucumbers and the zucchinis wrapped individually here, right? It always bothers me. But that's one big thing that is quite different, right? Well, one big thing that is very different in that when you get back to New Zealand and you walk into Pak n Save or Fresh Choice or somewhere, there's the bins, right? With apples galore, and you just select which ones you want and you're touching other ones before you actually select yours. which seems so normal and natural, and yet in Japan, I don't think that even happens, even at the bigger outlets, right? It's always somehow packaged. Very interesting. Switching again, then, along the same lines, but you've worked in government as well as an advisor, and now in private sector. Do you see the role of government in some way helping to facilitate these business partnerships in Japan? I guess you can't say no because of what you've had as your past. But tell us how that actually happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, when I was working with NZTE, I saw many business delegations come through, or relationships that NZTE supported through the Rugby World Cup, for example, and other events. And absolutely, New Zealand companies have a lot to benefit from working closely with NZTE, or, in our case, MPI, MPAT. Often through those relationships, you actually get to deepen your relationships with other New Zealand companies. So NZTE are very good at supporting, our partnership as FreshCo with other New Zealand exporters. So then, I have more people to draw upon for advice or, support if I need it. In this role, I'm the only employee from FreshCo based in Japan. So these networks are really, really important to me. Obviously, I've got my colleagues based in New Zealand, but in terms of my professional network in Japan, the other New Zealand companies or the ANZ CCJ members, and working with the embassy is critical to our growth here.
Great. Well, I know we've just been seeing you being an amazing mother as well as an amazing business person in the market. And I know Jane's got a few questions to ask you here.
Oh, okay. Hand it over.
Hand it over.
Yeah, Jess, you're an amazing inspiration doing the mahi and yeah, also raising a family here in Japan. And I know we're seeing more and more families coming through to live in Japan. And, our family situations are all different, but would love to hear about some of the, I don't know, strategies or support networks that you've been able to use to enable you to continue your career as well.
I think firstly, I've worked for really supportive organizations since I've lived in Japan. So, for example, with FreshCo in February this year, I returned to New Zealand for 5 weeks, and I was based in Blenheim with my family. That was a great opportunity for them to spend time with our daughter, but also I could visit our growing regions in Hawke's Bay and Gisborne and spend time, better understanding our product, spending time with my colleagues and also our Japanese customers who tend to visit during harvest season. So this was an amazing opportunity. And I really feel that because my work is involved with New Zealand so deeply, that I don't feel homesick as such. I have, a visit to New Zealand, my colleagues visit Japan. I'm actively involved with groups like yourselves or the Chamber or other New Zealand companies. So I really feel a deep connection to both countries in my work. And I think that really helps with, my success here. I guess regarding strategies to cover all of these things, one thing I've had to really focus on is outsourcing the things such as some of the domestic responsibilities so that I can really focus on what's important, and that's my family and my work. So, for example, we have babysitters involved frequently when I'm traveling for work. And that's not very common in Japan. In fact, it's very hard to find people to help with that. But we've now found a couple of Japanese ladies who are very supportive of our family. And without them, I couldn't do the work that I'm doing. So I think, outsourcing where I can has really helped.
Is there anything that you see that you have here that potentially people in New Zealand don't have access to? And I was thinking about the hoiku and the kindergarten situation in Japan seems to be amazing to me. That really, really well done, very supportive of working parents.
Yeah, I think Japan is a really great place to raise children. And we've started from around 5 months when our daughter was in daycare, and the support is incredible. We get at our daycare center, nappies are provided for free. There are lots of different incentives in Japan for people to have more babies. So these things are becoming, I guess, financially more accessible. The cost for having a child in daycare here for us is around $600 a month, or 6 man Japanese yen per month. The opening hours are also quite long, although I don't use the center for the entire opening hours. It is open for parents to have children in there from any time from 7:30 in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. They also provide the meals, so even if your child's not eating, a lot at dinner time, at least you're assured that they've had a well-balanced meal in the daycare center. So we have a very simple life here. I highly recommend bringing
Yeah,
up
they I
children in
think
Japan.
yeah, having small children is actually great. Like there's buses that come to your door and pick up your child and then drop them off later. There's all sorts of things. And you know, it does get a bit trickier later when they get into the compulsory education system, but you know, that may not be a factor for every family that, for example, comes from New Zealand to Japan. Could you share some advice for aspiring women exporters or women business professionals looking to enter the Japanese market?
Yeah, please come.
Yes,
The more the
come.
merrier. It is tough. Most meetings I'm in with our business associates here, unless there's somebody from NZT with me or a female colleague from New Zealand, I'm generally the only female in the room. It's
What's
still
that
diff
like? Is it
it's
okay though?
I still find it fairly difficult. It will take, I think, a lot more practice and, gaining confidence in that area. I really hope that I'm inspiring someone else in that office to grow in their career as well. So I really look forward to the day when we don't have to say "jose no kata." I've a number of times heard, for example, an ex-colleague explaining about a retail buyer, and they say, "Oh, jose no kata desu kedo," like she's a female, but her name is whatever. Like I look forward to the day that we don't have to brief someone that the person that they're about to meet is a female. I would just say it's taking time, but I do hope that being here and being in the meeting is improving the representation of women in the workforce in Japan.
Yeah, I've found lately with those sort of comments, if you actually bring it to the attention of the person who's said it, maybe not right in front of them, it's quite remarkable the reception that they will give you, as they never really thought about the fact that they were saying "jose no kata," and I think they probably think that they're being polite or helping someone to understand a situation that they may be overthinking about. But I've done that a few times recently, and it depends how you say it, but it's like, yeah, you don't need to say that. It's actually okay not to now. Try it next time without saying that. See how it goes. Try and make it more fun and a little bit light-hearted. And I've found that, you know, it's a little bit more receptive these days than what it used to be, more than what I thought. I was in a place recently where they had such and such man. It was the people who were working on a particular section in the company. And I said, hey, you could probably change that to just people. And they went, oh, yeah. We were wondering how to reduce the length of that word anyway, so people would be good. So they were quite happy to know that that was okay. So I give that challenge to everyone that they can probably actually do more here than what they think, and we can each one by one change our situation by the actions that we do too. But great to point that out.
I also think sometimes as a foreign female, it's easier to speak up about these things than for a Japanese female.
Absolutely.
So we bring a unique perspective. We come from a country where things are, I guess, more advanced than they are in Japan. So it is really nice to be able to share a perspective of how we hope to see change. And an example of this is, I guess, some of our customers in the retail sector are fairly old school. And this year, I saw a group of Shin New Shayin, the new staff, joined the company, and all of the women were wearing uniforms, skirts, long socks, the bow tie, and they've come to work for this supermarket chain. And I questioned one of the guys in the meeting, "Oh, why are the ladies wearing uniforms?" And he couldn't answer, and he was just like, "Yeah, we're really old fashioned, but." Yeah, I mean, I look forward to the day where the ladies can wear what they want to work, like the men can.
Absolutely, absolutely. What's something then that you probably weren't expecting working full time here in Japan with your child But maybe in a way it's easier than it is in New Zealand to some extent. You've talked a little bit there about how it is easy to bring up a child, but is there anything in particular that you might hear from working mothers or women in New Zealand that you maybe don't hear in Japan?
I think I'm in a very unique, fortunate position that my office is very close to my home. In fact, I work from home when I'm not traveling for work. So I think one of the biggest challenges that working mums have in New Zealand is the time that they're spending commuting to work. So I can't say that that's exactly a condition that would be the case for all listeners, but to not have a commute has been incredible. It means I can focus on those things that are really important. I don't know. I think sometimes life feels a lot more simple here because you don't have maybe the same, well, for me anyway, I don't have the same social network that I had when I was in New Zealand. So I can really focus on my family. My parents, for example, they're not nearby. So yeah, we really have quite a simple life. But yeah, I also get, good support from my in-laws. So I'm very fortunate.
Awesome. Do you have one gem you can share with us that you consider that your most valuable piece of advice for people wanting
Yeah,
to be
sure.
involved in Japan?
I've got two. One I forgot to mention earlier, but I would just say the importance of getting to know your peers in the market. So other New Zealand companies, they may not be in the same industry as you, but there's always a lot to learn from the experiences that others have had. And for me, that has been really, really important for my growth in this role is, many of them have been on your podcast, but these people who I can learn from and share my challenges with, I would say that I really recommend New Zealand companies who are doing business in Japan to widen their network to others who are in the same kind of situation. And the other gem I was taught by my former boss, Craig Pettigrew. He was Trade Commissioner at NZTE, and it will always stick with me. I remember him explaining it to a business delegation over breakfast, and some of those business delegates had done business in Japan for many years. But what he said was, in Japan, remember the power of the pause. So when you're in a meeting as a New Zealand business person, you ask a question to the Japanese counterpart, and rather than allowing them the time to answer the question, you go in with a second question, or you just start talking because you're uncomfortable with the silence. That's always something I've tried to remember when I'm in the meeting, but also shared with my colleagues, because I think naturally New Zealanders feel awkward when there's silence, but actually the Japanese counterpart needs time to understand the question, figure out how they're going to answer it. They might be working out amongst the team who's going to answer. So one really important thing that I've learned is that listening is more important than talking.
Too right. That's why they always say, isn't it? We've got two ears, one mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, double it up on the listening side of things. That pause has been spoken about in the past, but I think Craig was really onto a great thing there and just leaving the moment. And I'm not sure if I've said it on the Jandals podcast before, that this 45-second rule is apparently where it's at. They've done tests and research in Japan. And 45 seconds is actually about the right time to wait for someone to make an answer, give an answer. Which, if you start counting that out now, as you're listening
Ages
to this podcast, it feels like a very long time.
and
But you can,
eternity.
if you're in the room, you can read it. And I often just say, look, I'll just pause here. And you're letting people know that you're pausing and just read the room and then come back in. It is a really classic, great tip to give away. Thank you so much.
I love that naming, the power of the pause. Yeah, that's easy
Yeah.
to remember. Thank you for sharing Craig's advice to you.
And then, how about a crystal ball moment? You're right in the thick of New Zealand business, in particular in Japan. How do you see relations going forward between New Zealand and Japan? Any emerging opportunities or challenges or anything you're seeing from your part of the world?
I think in the food space, it's only going to go from strength to strength. So, Japan has a really low food self-sufficiency. You will see that more and more farmers are retiring. People aren't taking up farming. So Japan and New Zealand are naturally great partners. We can supply in the off season. So I think there's got to be more opportunities for New Zealand companies to be supplying the market.
I also want to ask you because it's just saw something come through on my inbox today about frozen food. Do you know much about the inclination towards frozen food in Japan? People are saying it's really hot, that there's a lot that people are doing, that it's popular amongst consumers. How are you seeing that frozen food end of the market, perhaps with produce you could share?
Yeah, there has been some really exciting change in the frozen fruit category. And I'd say one of those is 7-Eleven leading with the creation of their smoothies. So the company that creates the smoothie is the same company we supply with apples for 7-Eleven. And they are creating a lot of new flavors. The 7-Eleven is installing machines. These smoothies are becoming a really popular, breakfast or snack option. And I think now the frozen fruit category is growing as the prices of fresh fruit are going up. Frozen fruit is becoming more of a suitable option for some people. And now there are more fruits available in a frozen format. So this kind of smoothie concept is really taking off, people making them at home or buying them in a convenience store.
Have you tried them, Catherine, the new smoothie machine in 7-Eleven?
No,
You should give it a go. It's good
I'm going to
fun.
go.
Yeah, it
Okay,
is
they're
fun.
delicious as well.
I'll promise I will go and do that this week.
Well, it's already getting pretty warm here, so I think like for a
Yes.
snack, something like that, it's like frozen fruit blended
Wait,
with ice.
right.
It's
Whereabouts is it
perfect.
located? Is it up the front where you go and pay for
Next
your
to the
stuff?
coffee
Do you
machine.
request it there? Do you? Oh, really? Okay.
Next to the
I'll go
coffee
find it.
machine. Pick up your cup from the freezer with the one that you want, right? The blueberry one or the strawberry one or the
Oh.
whatever. And then take it and pay for it. And then you put it in the machine, which is next to the coffee machine. So, Jess, tell us about your Instagram page and what you're trying to achieve through that.
So I started this Instagram page when I was working with a lot of New Zealand companies, and some of them were really unfamiliar with the retail environment in Japan. So I started to take photographs to show this is what happens in Halloween. Everything changes. There's a whole new category created. Or this is what Seijoishi looks like. This is what Hanamasa looks like, to try to convey what the Japanese retail environment is like to New Zealand companies. And then the Instagram page sort of morphed, and now what I do is, as I can, try to introduce New Zealand products that are available in Japan. Because when I was living in Shimane 15 years ago, I had no idea about where to buy New Zealand products. And so I hope through this page I can showcase to the, I think, 3,500 Kiwis living in Japan, where to find New Zealand products, and also to New Zealand companies that follow me, this is what New Zealand businesses are doing in Japan.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like watching to see where I should be visiting next time I'm in the Tokai in the city or something as well. So yeah, keep up the good work and thank you for doing that. It's sort of a thankless job, I'm sure, finding all of these locations where we can access our good old New Zealand products.
Yeah, it's fun. And I only have a small number of followers, but I really hope that they enjoy the content.
Yeah, well, we will definitely link that up in the show notes. So everybody who's listening, go and follow Jess on Instagram.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Jess, is there anything you've got to share with us? Any news, any new projects or initiatives that you're working on that our listeners should know about?
Yeah, well, I guess for us, we are a seasonal company. We come to market around this time, so middle to end of April is the beginning of the New Zealand apple season in Japan. So listeners in Japan can look forward to the next 4 months, I suppose, of New Zealand fresh apples in stores. I would say most supermarkets that you visit should have New Zealand apples. And also at the end of April, just in time for Golden Week, in addition to all the other Japanese retailers we're launching at, we're also launching our Breeze, our first apple with Costco Japan. So they've got 33 warehouses here, and our program has grown a lot with Costco since we started last year. And so we're really excited that Costco members can now do in-store demonstrations, tasting our fruit, and also they can enjoy Breeze for the next couple of months in Costco. So it's a really exciting time. FreshCo brings a number of varieties through the season, so Japanese consumers love newness and change. We're bringing a number of varieties that have a different taste or color or shape. Each is quite an individual offering. So this is a very exciting time for us because we're about to, start selling our fruit in Japan for the 2024 season. And
Woo!
Last year was tough. We had the cyclone in Hawke's Bay in 2023. So 2024 has been amazing weather in Hawke's Bay. Things are looking really, really hopeful for everyone within the company and our growers for the season. So, yeah, we look forward to seeing how Japanese consumers love our fruit.
Absolutely wonderful. An apple a day keeps the doctor away, as we know. So
With
let's
the
go with
skin.
that.
With skin on, yes.
With skin on, exactly. You've got me thinking about different shape, but I won't ask you that. I'll wait for it and see what's in market and let you know what I when I see my first New Zealand apple, I'll promise that for you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jess, for being an amazing guest today. You've given away so many wonderful tips and insights, and we really welcome you to the officially to the Jandals in Japan community. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you both for the time today and also for all the hard work you're doing with this podcast and the outreach. And I'm interested to know where to next. What's the future of the podcast?
We would like to know that too. We're just following the breadcrumbs to see where it goes. We would love to see more people such as yourself coming over to Japan and trying these country manager roles here in Japan. That would be fantastic to see more wahine tour in action over here, right?
I'm very supportive of that and happy if anyone has any further questions to reach out to me.
Thank you so much for your time today, Jess.
Awesome. Thank you, ladies.
Wow, who knew? What's going on in the world of apples and other fresh produce here in Japan? I really enjoyed hearing from Jess today.
Incredible download, wasn't it? She's just got a way of telling us all the things that are happening in the produce world, especially with New Zealand produce coming in here. It's just so exciting, I feel, when I walk into a supermarket and I see New Zealand produce there. It just fills my heart with joy. And then I go and actually buy it, and that's another treat, obviously. But it's just incredible that we can be here in that off season, utilizing it really well.
And so much potential coming in the next 10, 20 years in the future here in Japan, because as I mentioned about the situation of agriculture, it's going to be quite dire. So, yeah, how can New Zealand technological businesses help with this? Our innovation is going to be very, very useful in the near future.
Absolutely, and that's what they're doing with innovation, isn't it? Growing techniques, the packaging, and having that chap from the office down in New Zealand, as I said, living the dream and just really, really being able to get immersed into how it's done in New Zealand. He will bring back such an immense amount of information back to Japan, and then it could just spread amongst other people who are having those businesses in that part of the country that is really conservative. So it could be quite game changing for the market
Oh,
here, right?
definitely. Yep.
Yeah. Though on packaging, I think we've still got a way to go there. I really do want to get away from that plastic, but it looks like it might not happen for a little while
Oh,
in
I don't think
Japan. So
so.
when you're here, I mean, I guess you know if you've got something that's in fresh produce or anything, it really is going to be in plastic. It seems to be still the popular way to wrap things in Japan. Some
Oh, definitely.
progression in cardboard or paper, but again, it's I think Jess brought that out really well, that it's still something that we battle with in Japan.
Yeah, and it's just different values, isn't it? Like they value this other thing, but for plastic is non-negotiable that my food will have not been just touched by everybody before I
True,
buy
and there are
it.
some plastics that are biodegradable more than some of the papers I've seen as well. I've seen some research on that around that too. So you never
Yep,
know.
but a lot of plastic in Japan actually gets burnt. Doesn't go to landfill. It gets burnt. It's used as, well, in my city, it's used as fuel to burn other trash. So,
Interesting.
it is treated a little bit different too in New Zealand where it may end up in landfill. So, something to consider
Wow.
there as well.
And then there was that big warm welcome for some New Zealand wahine toa to come into Japan and try and take the
Yes.
footsteps, leap into those behind Jess and do some other mahi there. Do something here,
That we
right?
are here. So
Yeah.
reach out, let us know you're here too if you're listening. If you have found your way to this podcast episode and listening, reach out to us, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And I'm going to go get a smoothie on that note. So I'll see you later, everyone. We'll come back again for
Okay.
another Jandals episode
Jealous.
shortly. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
listening. Make sure you check out our guests' links in the show notes.
This podcast is brought to you today by Catherine O'Connell Law and Pod Launch with Jane. If you have a great story you think should be on the show, come and find us on LinkedIn or Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. See you next time.
Mata ne!